On the Pilot TV podcast this week, we are dabbling in a little alternate history with My Lady Jane on Apple TV Plus, engaging in some juvenile detective work in A Good Girl's Guide to Murder on The Beeb, and finally getting the food we ordered last week with The Bear. Honestly, the service here is absolutely awful, but that's all right because Anna Chancellor and Rob Brydon are here to discuss their roles as dastardly parental figures in My Lady Jane. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast that is absolutely delighted to welcome a thoroughly massaged and entirely relaxed Kay back from her massive jolly, sorry, it says here, essential work trip to Thailand. Mm-hmm. How was it? Tell us.
It was great. I thought you'd enjoy the fact that I went to Krabi in Thailand. Yeah, it was good. Listen, cry me a river. It was raining every day because it's low season, and I got bitten to buggery, but the food was exceptional. The people are incredibly kind, and I had a great time.
So bitten, I'm assuming, like, by insects, not in a sex way.
Oh, dear.
Oh, my God.
Well, I don't know what kind of massages you're paying for, Kay. I have no idea what's happening.
Listen, that might be your experiences of massages. You might have a happy time. I did not. No mosquitoes and midges and whatever. Right. I always get bitten, but... No, it was really good. And let it be known for the record that I took my very heavy Yeti microphone with me because we were going to record. Which episode? Was it the spoiler special?
No, we were going to do The Bear. We were going to do our review of The Bear with you remotely, except we couldn't review The Bear because they didn't give us The Bear, so we hadn't seen The Bear. Not that I'm bitter.
Yeah. So instead, I had this bear-heavy microphone with me, but yes. No need for it. But yes, such was my dedication. I want listeners to know I wasn't just like having a jolly. I was sort of semi going to work.
Oh, tenuous.
Well, this microphone is at least half the size of Kay, really. Let's be honest. So
yeah, look,
it's not a small undertaking. She can hide behind it. So
yes,
fair.
Exactly.
Okay, well, you know, it's nice to have you back.
Thank you.
I felt really bad because Kay, you know, had this trip all about wellness and calm and peacefulness and all that, and I had to say to her. At one point, just send me your fucking soap copy. Kay does a tiny little column in Heat every week.
Let's not underestimate it. Well, small but mighty.
Small but important. But I just needed it, and there was no way around, you know, just having to.
I was at the airport. Yeah, right. I was at the Krabi airport, literally just kind of like checking in, and then I got this text from Boyd. He was like, "Send me your soap copy now," and I was like, can it wait? Because the time difference, obviously, and I was jet lagged to fuck. So I'm a bit woozy bomboozy today. Just say that.
Woozy bomboozy.
Yeah, I'm a bit woozy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, have you woozily watched the shows for this week's podcast?
Yes. Okay. And honestly, there was one that I watched, and I thought, is it because I'm jet lagged, or is it because it's
no spoilers? No spoilers.
Yep.
Spoilers.
Mm-hmm. Not saying anything.
We'll wait and see. Okay, good. Right. Did you watch any TV while you were away? What have you been watching? Was there any TV watchery?
No. I mean, I watched some stuff on the plane. The films weren't amazing. So I watched 4 episodes of Motherland, which I enjoyed immensely.
Which
obviously, I've seen
series?
First series.
Okay.
So it's the first 4 eps. And I was trying to figure out, I watched all of them. I was like, oh God, which one? Because they're all brilliant. But I think my favourite out of the 4 would be the Tom Bowler one. You know, the fundraiser, school fundraiser, when Julia gets sort of cajoled into doing the fundraising thing, the thermometer, and ends up just buying everything because she insults the main woman organising it, who she wants to get a job from. So yeah, it was really good. But other than that, when I got back, I finished Insomnia, which you'll remember is the Vicky McClure drama on Paramount Plus. And I have to say, I spoke about it last week or week 4 and said I was really enjoying it because it was really compelling. You know, it's a twisty, turny, psychological thriller. And then it goes super nutty and it lost me. I'm not going to say how, but it's kind of beyond the realms of credulity. And I felt it was a little shame because up until that point, I was so gripped. Even by my standards, it went a bit crazy town. So that was Insomnia.
I'm not surprised. It's Sarah Pimbra. Like, yeah, this Sarah is kind Pimbra, of very yeah. much her stock yeah. and trade, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just insanity.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly.
And then the other thing I watched was the I Am Celine documentary on Prime Video, which is about Celine Dion and her debilitating stiff person syndrome, which is robbing her of her joy, which is obviously singing. And it was so emotional and heartbreaking. I think everyone should watch it because I just think it's, she shows such resilience, and it's obviously just so sad to see her suffering in this way, but also like the fact that she was brave enough to want to make this documentary in the first place, because it's bookended by her having seizures, and you really get to see the impact it has on her and how helpless she is in it and how she is still so devoted to singing and performing and everything, and how it's like it is crushing, but she's determined to overcome it as best she can. So yeah, I'd recommend that.
There's no way James is going to watch Celine Dion documentary.
Oh, come on, James.
I'm breaking the news to you
now. None at all.
No.
You'll watch it, boy, don't you?
Yeah, I know more about it and I've seen the... Yeah, I am interested to watch it, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. My eyes will not watch it, but my heart will go on.
Yeah. Very good. That's one reference, musical reference I wanted to get.
Non-Taylor Swift reference. When's your... By the way, I've been meaning to mention this to you. I know we've been through this many times, but... Like, everyone's in a Taylor Swift frenzy this week because she was playing at Wembley and she's played in wherever, somewhere else, Scotland, didn't she? And when's your fucking, when are you seeing her?
Not till August.
He won't give us the date. Why won't you tell us the date?
I don't want you coming with me. Yeah, you'll turn up and you'll be there.
Do you think you're going to be mobbed by Pilot TV fans?
Only by you two. Only by you two. Like, no one else cares that I'm going to see Taylor Swift. No.
The dire Swifty subset. He's worried that they're all going to get mixed together. But it's ruining it for you. The fact that you have to wait while everyone else has already seen it.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Okay. All right.
I'm okay with it. Like, you know, because it's been on Disney Plus. Like, you know, the whole thing is available to watch.
She the same though. She's not adapted it for
because she's released another album and the playlist has all changed since then. Right, so right. Since she started Europe, since she landed in Paris, the set list has changed.
Right, and that's good. Credit to her for that.
It's been mixed
Question.
up.
Question: Do you have a T-shirt you're going to wear?
Yes,
number one. Are you taking your own glow sticks?
Glow sticks? No, but they provide a bracelet which does like lighty uppy things, a Bluetoothy thing. Yeah.
Coldplay started that years ago. Coldplay did that.
Yeah, they did. I look forward to him wearing it for weeks on end afterwards. Yeah. Just to
I will
shake
never
it.
Take it off. I will never shake it off.
Did you see the footage of Andrew Scott and
Fleabag? Yes, I did.
Running it, brilliant.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah. Who's filming this stuff? Like they film
everyone.
So brilliant.
Yes, yeah. Running back when Style came on, and then them boogieing away in the little VIP tent, which I will not be invited to sit in, by the way. I don't even know how we got into this. How did we segue into this?
I don't know. Celine Dion. I brought it up. Sorry, it's my fault.
Right. Yeah. That's fine. Okay, Celine Dion. Boydie, what have you been watching?
Talking of Motherland, Anna Maxwell Martin. Sorry, this is theatre news rather than TV news to start with.
Oh, good. So relevant.
Yeah. So I went to see...
with TV people
in it. Come on. So I went to see The Constituent, which is the play written by Joe Penhall, which is on at the Old Vic in London, starring Anna Maxwell Martin and James Corden. So it's Corden's first post... This is actually TV news, really, because it's his first post Late Late Show project. Obviously, Gavin Stacey will be next, which I think they'll start filming in a couple of months when he's finished this run. But it's a fantastic play. It's very topical. It's about a constituency MP, backbench MP, who's confronted by this person, this guy played by James, who's an ex-military man, and he has a whole agenda. And it's mostly but not entirely a two-hander. There's another character in there, a policeman, who's also very interesting. But it was really good. So yeah. I've got a question to listeners. I was going to put this on Twitter, but I thought I'd put it on the pod. In the scene changes in this play, right, they play music. They play two songs in particular. They play The Smiths' Last Night That I Dreamt That Somebody Loved Me and a Billy Bragg song called Between the Wars. And they play them pretty much in their entirety, basically, and, you know, throughout the evening. Mostly The Smiths' song to start with and then the Billy Braggs in the end. It's not mentioned anywhere in the program because I scoured the program about these songs being used. Like, there's no, like, thanks to them or whatever. Or, like, they must have had permission. And, you know, I think they're not credited.
They must
anywhere.
Have to pay money as well,
presumably,
right?
Presumably, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But there's no credit. There's no, you know, how do you credit the songs or whatever? I know. I'm just interested because I'm not a theatre person. Because if this was on a film or TV thing, you'd have to credit it and pay the money and be quite expensive, you know, all of that stuff. So, yeah, just putting it out there. Fascinating.
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know, listeners, if you know anything about the rights to use music in theatrical plays. Anyway. Then I'm also very tired because I did stay up to watch the presidential debate last night. On CNN, We started at 2 a.m. It started at 2 a.m.
Boyd, I can't bear it. I woke up, sorry, just to interrupt. I basically woke up with jet lag about 3 o'clock and just happened to, I did the wrong thing that you meant to do with sleep and I looked at Twitter. Yeah. And then I saw it unfolding and I was like, oh God, no. And I had to just like put it down and
The funny thing
close
was,
my eyes.
It was basically me and Terry White. Terry messaged me. I knew you'd be watching. I was like, And oh my God, it was such a disaster. I know James doesn't like it when we get too political, but all I'm going to say is I'm just observing the fact that if you happen to be one of those people who doesn't want Trump to be elected to be next president, I mean, it's just a complete, absolute calamity, because Joe Biden was just awful. And all the things you worried about him, you know, he's an 82-year-old man, you know. My mum's 83, 84. I wasn't going to put my mum up on stage, you know.
Do you know what? And at this stage, I'd be prepared to. If you want to push your mum to be the Democratic nominee, I'm on board.
I'll tell you this much. She's certainly more coherent. Everything you worried about him, it just all came to, like, within seconds of him arriving on stage. And they put out a message about halfway through that he had a cold. I was like, this is nothing to do with
the least of his problems.
It was, and I think it was a turning point, because they're just going to have to ditch him. They can't carry on like this. So as we speak on Friday morning, the morning after the night before, it's like all the US media are like, because then I watched the debate, and then you watch CNN for the fallout, you know, the analysis afterwards. All of CNN is the most democratic, pro-democratic, you know, outlet in America, in the world. And they were all like, all these CNN people were like, oh my God, they've got to do something about this. This is a disaster. So I think it's a proper turning point. It'll go down in history, one of the worst debate performances ever, and then consequentially leading to him being dumped at some point in the near future.
I could not watch it, because it just feels like it would be the most stressful thing imaginable. And I watched 3 episodes of The Bear in the last 24 hours. Yeah. And I'm telling you, I can't deal with that kind of stress. So I just,
I watched, it was also funny because I saw West Wing people, like West Wing actors, you know, commenting on it. And one of them was like, yeah, this is like every episode of The West Wing, except it isn't, because it's worse. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, yeah. You know, it's like, it just could not come up with something this bad. It really is like a story out of The West Wing, though. And then the drama, the Democratic convention is going to be fascinating.
I mean, that'll be good television, has
to
be said.
That'll be amazing television, yeah. So
what time do you go to bed?
Oh, 4?
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God, boys. We've talked about this. You need your booster sleep.
Yeah. And then the other thing I wanted to mention is, also in American TV, Martin Short has been singing for Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel on the chat show, he goes away for the summer and he lets guest hosts take over. And Martin Short's been first. And Martin Short has brought back my favorite character that I've banged on about many times before on this podcast, Jiminy Glick. Jiminy Glick is this a spoof interviewer, celebrity interviewer, wearing a grotesquely large fat suit and with incredible, like, you've got to see it to believe it. And he's like the biggest idiot, like, maniac interviewing this. And if you look at, they did Sean Hayes so far, Nick Kroll, and Bill Hader, the Bill Hader one. If you Google Jiminy Glick Bill Hader and just watch it, it's so funny. And what the joy of it is that the people he's interviewing, like Bill Hader, they're just cracking up all the way through. They can't deal with it because it's so funny to be confronted by this over-the-top maniac character played by Martin Short. Yeah, okay.
Question.
Yes.
Are you saying he's covering the whole of Jimmy's show?
No, this week. He's doing a week currently.
Oh, right, because I was going to say, like,
there'll be other famous weeks on people. End of yeah, it. No, I think other famous people will be hosting other weeks, yeah. So he's doing a guest, yeah, it's just brilliant. So I want to see the return of Jiminy Glick getting his own series. And he did a film. It's just one of the funniest characters in history. So, yeah, check it out. Check it out, guys.
Bold claim.
What have I watched this week? To be honest, in fact, I'm going to use this opportunity to say what I watched this week primarily was Supercell. Now, I'm cheating slightly because obviously we reviewed Supercell on Pilot Plus last week because it was embargoed and we were unable to. But I kind of feel the need to drag it into the main podcast as well, just because I love the show so much and I think it's wonderful. I'm slightly obsessed with it.
I was so gutted I didn't get to review that with you guys.
So we talked about this. We talked about how, in fact, we spent a good portion of the review discussing how Kay would react to the show because... It's kind of like a gritty sort of verite drama, sort of social realist drama with superpowers. So we thought, on the one hand, half of that, Kay is immediately out. But on the other hand, Kay is very much in. So we were wondering where you'd fall on it. And I think you'd like it.
I watched it. I thought we... Yeah, of course, because I was prepared. I thought... I watched it before I went to Thailand because I thought we were going to review it as soon as I was back.
Yeah.
And I didn't... and then I got my dates wrong and I didn't realise I wouldn't be back in time.
Oh, so let's hear your review of Supercell right here, right now.
I just fucking loved it. I thought it was great. I mean, I don't have my notes now because they're in the other, but I just thought it was really, really good. And you're right, because as someone who's not really into superheroes or that kind of thing, you know, you would think that I'd be turned off. But from the second I saw Ratman talking about it at the Netflix event we went to, and the way he was so passionate about it, I was like, okay. And we saw a little clip and I was like, okay, no, this actually looks really good. And then when I watched the first episode, I was like, I was so sold on it. I thought it was really smart and fresh and funny. I love that, you know, it was these kind of Black South London superheroes. I really liked the character of Michael. And okay, yeah, that was also because I fancied him. But but I just was so invested in all the characters. Mm. And it's so a not, inverted commas, not me show. But the writing is so good, the acting, everything about it. I loved it.
Yeah, it is great. It's right up there with my shows of the year so far. Mm. I'm absolutely obsessed with it. I binged all 6 episodes as soon as they were given to me. They only gave me the first 4, and I had to sort of beat the doors down to get the last 2 episodes, which was literally the day before it dropped anyway, so I could have just waited. But yeah, it is so good. I am fascinated to see where the show goes. I really hope that they get the 3-season run that Ratman's looking for this. But if you...
Oh, they have to,
sure. You would hope so. I really hope that it's big. By all accounts, I could... It's been incredibly well received, so I have very high hopes for this. But if you've yet to watch Supercell, it is on Netflix now. It's only 6 episodes, and they are wonderful. So
get on it,
indeed. The other thing I've been watching is The Acolyte. Now, we've been doing the Empire spoiler specials for this, so I'd be lying if I said that wasn't pretty much the only reason I have been watching it. That said, the 5th episode aired last week, and I have to say, it was a good episode. Like, they had really good action in it. It was a lot of fun. Only 35 minutes, it's still very short. That said, I still have issues with the writing of that show. I do think it's a little bit thin, and the character work is still extremely unconvincing. And there are a couple of segments in this that I really had issues with. That said, from a sort of fan service point of view, I think there was a lot there for people to love.
How many episodes is it?
I knew you were going to ask me that. I don't know off the top of my head. I want to say 8. But the only reason I want to say 8 is because it seems like a sensible number. I have no evidence to back that up whatsoever. Yeah. Is it 8? Is it 10? Could be 280. I genuinely don't know.
280?
But I'm going to assume it's 8. And I really hope it's not 280.
Yeah. No. Are you reminding me? I forgot about the other thing I did watch is The Boys. And oh my God, the Farmyard Animals.
Oh, yes.
The animals, honestly. Kay, you won't be able to deal with it. I'm just telling you now.
No. The animal thing is a lot.
Bestiality.
Oh my god.
No, it's
more complicated than that. But yeah, it's quite the episode. Yeah. It's genuinely this series of The Boys. Like we were saying at the beginning of this, there is not a single episode of this season that doesn't make you go, holy shit, I can't believe they did that.
Yeah, basically. I was like downplaying it to start with, except in a way for the first episode, which was the least, you know, kind of the least.
We just got bumholes in the first episode. Kind of took off from there.
Oh, yeah.
Will an episode never occur without someone saying bumhole in this bloody podcast?
No, I think it's now something we now have to work into every episode.
Between bumhole and bumlurgy, it's like we're bum obsessed.
Yeah, it is a bit like that. But yeah, Boys, it's a hell of a show.
Yeah.
I shall not be continuing.
Fair enough. You won't be there to see the Farmyard Animals. But speaking of which, what you will be doing is bringing us a listener question, because it is time for this week's listener question. Kay's had an entire week in the sun, well, let's be honest, the rain, to delve through the post bag, as evidenced by the most recent Pilot Plus, where I was forced to bring back the much-vaunted triage system. I'm so sorry for that.
James, I sent you them.
I mean,
why
you sent
you
me one. Let's be honest,
list?
You sent me one.
I sent you a link to my Twitter with them all listed there. What do you think that link was?
I didn't see a link. Boydie, did you see a link? Because Boydie read out you had again, I'm not going back to what we've just been discussing, but you had a boys question, and we dealt with that one and did a couple of others. But no, I didn't see a link. Wow, this is something that slipped past.
Right, okay. Let me refer you to this link here, which says, hey, just click on this, and I've got all the responses. The postbag is on my work laptop, but there should be some here that we're yet to answer.
A rare bout of James word blindness.
Missed that.
Right.
What question have you got for us?
So it's from Graham Clues, who says, can you think of a season finale or revelation that may have been good, but you just couldn't accept it because you already had another possibility in your head that didn't happen? My example is Doctor Who's season finale. I'm a long-time Doctor Who fan, and I thought this season's finale wasn't great, but it was made worse because I'd convinced myself that Ruby's mother would be revealed at the very end by removing her hood, and we all see it's Billy Piper. Have you had season finale slightly ruined because of your own private wish list?
Wow, that's...
it's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to take some thinking about.
Yeah.
Okay, I've had a second to think about it, and I've kind of twisted the question.
You've had a second even though you knew it was coming and you picked this question. I mean...
No, I chose it just before we came on because I forgot. I always forget about this listener question on the main pod. So it's a bit of a cheat, but I would say at the end of season 2 of season 2 of The White Lotus even, you know Tanya, Jennifer Coolidge, dying, I really was convinced that she wasn't dead. And I thought either that she would, I know we saw a body, but we didn't see her. I don't think we either didn't see her face, or there was some ambiguity I felt. And I thought, oh, maybe she won't be dead. Maybe because I didn't want her to be, basically. And then I read the interview recently that she did with Jeremy Allen White that they did for Vanity Fair, I think it was. And she very much confirmed that she's gone. So, I mean, I suppose that's not answering the question, but it's an answer of sorts. That I didn't want Jennifer Coolidge's character to be, I was convinced she wasn't dead, but she, alas, was.
I'm trying to think of genuine, it's not quite the question, is it? Like terrible things. One of the main terrible things I remember is Dexter went off the rails in so many different ways. But the bit where Deb, Dexter's sister, decides that she's in love with him towards the end of it, I remember watching that going, what is happening? I mean, adopted sister, but nevertheless, I was just like, what the fuck is happening? And that show had got so bad, but that was, I think, one of the worst writing decisions I've encountered in a long-running show. And I include the murder subplot in season 2 of Friday Night Lights in that conversation.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, again, we're not answering the question, but no. I think that's a good answer for what's a bad finale.
Yes, that's an excellent answer to a question. Not this question, crucially, but a good answer to a question.
None of us so far have answered the question. Boyd, come on, you do the honours. You actually answer the question.
One of the most disappointing finales ever, in my opinion, is Girls. Right, Lena Dunham's Girls. But I think just because...
What happened? I can't remember.
It was a very banal thing about having a baby, and do you know what it was? Is I think I like these season finales of great shows like that should have some kind of like overarching, you know, reflection of what they're about. Do you know what I mean? Like for example, it could be a different kind of show, but Inside Number 9, which I've recently, their finale was so brilliant because, I mean, in a way you call it fan service. You know, it was an absolute reflection on the history of the show, right? And same with Curb Your Enthusiasm actually as well. You know, whereas Girls, kind of like, was just a bit of a blah, like nothingy ending. That's my issue with it. So is that some kind of answer to the question? Just being having a bit of like taking a bigger picture look at the show, being more aware, if you like, of the importance of saying goodbye to a classic show. I feel like that's key for me in enjoying season finales. And Girls didn't do it. Inside Number 9 did. Curb did. You know, blah, 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 that kind of thing.
Another very good answer to a question that is very clearly not this one.
No.
So we're doing well here talking around this.
That's
what I was laughing. I'm gonna answer Boydie's question, because that's reminding me of the finale of Star Trek Enterprise. So neither of you will have watched this, but Star Trek Enterprise, which is historically the worst Star Trek series. I mean, it wasn't good at all. It was incredibly bland. But the final episode of that, just to add insult to injury, and because the show had picked up towards the end, there'd been this whole Zindi war thing, which is quite entertaining. But the final episode, basically, there's a scene going on and someone just says, computer, freeze program, everything stops. And then Riker and Troy walk out, and basically it resolves that the whole of Star Trek Enterprise has just been a simulation running on the holodeck in one very particular episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, thereby essentially erasing it all from history. It was quite the bold move for a finale. On the one hand, it's terrible, but also it felt like it was just trolling everyone and just acknowledging the fact that nobody liked that series. But I mean, why would you do that? Why?
I hate it. It's like when they do stuff where it's like everything was just a dream.
Yeah, it was basically that. Everything was just a holodeck simulation, which is the less known Dallas Bobby plot. Again, not answering the question, but it's a thing.
It's a very difficult question to answer because like the Doctor Who example that the reader, what's his name again?
Graham.
Is really good. It's almost like a unique thing, isn't it? He's come up with in his idea what a particular plot within the whole this series of Doctor Who is going to be resolved with. So it's quite difficult to come up with another version, another example, rather. Yeah. So I'm saying it's too difficult.
Listen, we've said some words.
It ties a little bit to the most recent episode of The Acolyte in that a revelation was made in the most recent episode of The Acolyte about who a certain character was. And I did not think it was the character it turned out to be. I had it pegged as a different character. So in my head, I'd extrapolated the whole story based on it being this one character, and it turned out to be another one. Now, you could argue the person it turned out to be it was incredibly obvious it was going to be that person. But in my defense, I thought, they'll never make it that person. That would be too obvious and totally stupid. Listeners, it was both stupid and obvious and that one. But so to a certain extent, I guess that kind of answers the question in that, yes, I had in my head tried to work out the plot of the whole show based on my supposition that it was this person, and it wasn't.
But it wasn't a series finale, though.
It wasn't. Did they specifically say finales? Oh, then I didn't answer it.
That's what makes it so difficult. If the question had just been, what storyline did you have in your mind would be resolved in a certain way? And what's that's
Whoa. I don't think we should be slagging off.
I'm not slagging off. I'm saying it's a very interesting point.
No, this is the part of the podcast where Boydie goes for the questioner.
Do you remember when he lashed out? Was it Laura or someone? Like, if you just really gave her a good kick in about that question on Pilot Plus.
Boydie goes for the questioner.
Can you imagine if we had tried to do a week-by-week guide to the Bear, by the way? A spoiler special guide. I mean, ridiculous idea.
It would have been brilliant. It would have been brilliant. Don't bring it up, because it would have been good.
We'll get on to this a little bit later.
Yeah, we'll get on to that, yeah.
All right, anyway. That was the listener question, I think. If you want your question broadly ignored and us to talk about completely different things, then feel free to send your suggestions in to Kay at Kay Ribeiro on the Twitters or at Pilot TV Pod on really anything you want. Time for this week's guests. Anna Chancellor and Rob Brydon are the mother and prospective father-in-law from hell in this week's My Lady Jane. But luckily, they're far lovelier in person. Isn't that right, Boydie?
Oh, God, yeah, 100%. Unfortunately, for reasons, I had to record it in a way that made James furious and seething with anger at the lack of, shall we say, high fidelity audio. But yep. I think it's okay. It's going to be okay, isn't it?
It's all going to be all right, he said, with no evidence to support
that. We'll let the listeners decide.
Okay, so this is Boyd speaking to Anna Chancellor and Rob Brydon, recorded on his phone, because he is nothing if not a consummate professional.
Unbelievable. It's not my fault.
Welcome, Anna Chancellor and Rob Brydon, to the Pilot TV podcast.
Thank you.
How is Junket Life treating you, Rob? I know you're used to this. Week in, week out, you're doing junkets, showbiz junkets, talking about...
I rarely do them. We do some junket stuff when we do the trips, but that's been a while. So it's been a bit of a rude awakening to have a zillion questions. So you can imagine how my heart lifted when the door creaked open and a little face poked around.
Yes.
I thought, is that a Hilton face?
Yeah.
It was. It's me. It's me. Not the full body.
100%. And I know for you, I mean, you must be used to this. You have done so many films.
For films a bit, but we didn't never do this for TV.
No.
It's new, right? Well,
right.
Me.
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
But it's, we're pulling our weight, right?
Mm. Yes.
We want the show to be...
Yeah.
We want people to see it, because of course now... I mean, even if the show is the best in the world, if people don't know about it, so it's quite hard to get the, I imagine, for people to actually know that it's...
Well, there's never been more content, has there? There have never been more shows that people will quite genuinely say, you've got to see this, so good. This is so much good stuff.
100%, yeah. So we're talking about My Lady Jane, by the way, in case...
are we?
Yes.
Oh, sorry. No, I was going to talk about...
Gavin and Stacey?
Yes.
Of course. Now, I would describe it, the word that comes to mind is romp.
Are you serious?
Yes.
That's what I've been saying.
It's a massive romp.
That's Rob's favourite.
You're the first one to say that on that side.
Longer sentence.
Historical, hysterical romp. Mm-hmm. Or hysterical, historical romp.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah, but romp is the word I use.
Total romp, yeah.
It is.
And it was that what... But now, you know, Rob, I'm used to seeing you in all kinds of different things, but this is feels like the first time in quite a while that you did some proper acting.
Well, put it that way. That was the reason for doing it. I met with my agents a few years ago. We always have lunch at the beginning of the year. Right, what do we want to do? Where are we? Da-da-da. I said, well, it'd be nice to do something that just reminds people that I'm an actor that plays a role, you know, not like a version of myself, right, the trip. And even Gavin and Stacey, because he's Welsh, I think it's just, I'm just being myself in that. So then this came along, I thought, oh, yeah. And also the fact that he's scheming, duplicitous, manipulative, I don't usually get to do that. So that was really appealing. Mm. But yeah, you're right. It was a big part of the appeal was just an out-and-out acting role.
And Anna, I mean, you're scheming and manipulative as well. Maybe even more scheming and manipulative in the show. That must be fun to play.
Of course. I mean, playing the villain, playing the dark side. I think if it's funny, then that's just the ideal. That's the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Because you just, it just lights your imagination. And of course, it's fun being bad, right?
Oh, got it. Right.
Because it's your shadow.
You have to tell.
Yeah. It's your shadow side, whatever they call it. You know, you try and be kind of quite well behaved in life, you try. But then this is like the gloves are off.
Of course. Now, you're both kind of seasoned comedy performers as well. You've both done loads of comedy, I would say, and down the years. You've done all kinds of stuff. But when you get a comedy script like this and you're doing a show that is out, pretty much out and out comedy, do you feel like you have lots of input? Do you get to improvise? Do you stick to the script pretty closely?
Well, we did get to improvise, and that was one of the really big great surprises.
They wanted him all their time.
No, it was positively encouraged. One of the big things that attracted me was Jamie Babbitt, who had directed Only Murders in the Building.
Oh, yeah.
I just adore. Oh, yeah. So when this person who's directed C. Martin Short is laughing at your improvisation and encouraging you to do more, right. And then Gemma Burgess and Meredith Glynn, our writers and showrunners, yeah, they would let me. I mean, I've never done a scripted job where I've been more encouraged to make stuff up.
They also had this more relaxed view than maybe English directors and teams have. Like, if you go wrong, they're like, don't worry, start again. They're not so caught into like, okay, cut, everyone go back to the beginning.
That's reset. Really true, yeah.
So she was just like, fine, go back, Rod, do that again. So it was a bit, of course, why doesn't everyone bail a bit more? Because it's just fair,
yeah.
Right?
I remember that. I remember, those two things that when you messed up.
It didn't matter, did it?
No problem at all. No problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
And this improvisational element, which for me, because I've done so much improvisation, and I feel it's, it's a strength. I feel comfortable doing it.
And you're brilliant at it.
Well, that's not for me to say, but she's right.
Mm. We all know.
That was lovely for me. So then this turned into the perfect job for other reasons too. For both of us, we're the sort of size of the role. We're into about 2 or 3 days a week. Brilliant, I'm serious.
Yeah. Everyone was pleased to see us when we did.
Yeah, yeah.
And our roles, we're witty people in it. We're saying little zingers. I mean, wonderful. We don't have to do any stunts. We don't have to roll around on the floor. These are the things that matter.
Yes. Rolling around on the floor is quite a specific thing. You're not up for that. So if a role comes along which you have to roll around on the floor, you're like, no, I'm sorry, not for me.
Wow. I always say these things, all right. If it was rolling around the floor with, Al Pacino, right, I might make an exception.
Yes.
But generally speaking, I have no interest in jumping off things or rolling on things.
How many episodes have you seen?
4.
And did you actually like it?
I genuinely. I think it's really good fun. Yeah.
Look, some of the actors are so good, aren't they?
Yeah. It's also great. I just like the tone of it. It's got that kind of like.
The tone is interesting because we've been saying that when we're shooting it, okay, so we're doing our things and you got great people in like Cate Flynn and it's wrong to name him, Dominic Cooper.
Mm.
We're playing scenes. And you're going, I think this is working. There's a good, Anna and myself, there's a great dynamic. That's good. And we said, this is really good. But I remember us having a conversation once saying, okay, well, this is all well and good, but there's all these other elements to this, of course.
How are you going
to
do that?
With the Ethians and the CGI, which we were not troubled by during the shoot.
I had no idea, by the way, that was going to happen.
No, I know. Yeah, there's no idea.
I watched the show, and then suddenly someone turns into an animal, a big bear. I was like, oh, okay, there we are.
When they did that, you were like, here we go.
It was exciting. Yeah,
absolutely.
What's interesting is, the Sally Wainwright show. Sally Wainwright, brilliant writer of Happy Valley. Sally Wainwright. She had a similar thing in it, similar kind of fantastical
element. Which show was that?
It was, I've forgotten the name of it, I'm very professional.
It was Gentleman Jack.
Gentleman Jack, thank you.
Right.
No, not Gentleman Jack.
No.
Anyway, since then, Disney Plus show. Anyway, she had a big fantasy element and had sprites. Right. Nick Bahamut played a sprite and everything. But it just reminded me of this. And that was also a period.
Genius writer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, I have to say, even though you're not rolling around on the floor, you have, in I believe episode 2, a raunchy sex scene with a hot young man.
I know.
How was that for you?
Well, my son, boy.
Your son, even more so. Yeah, the lovely Henry Ashton.
Yeah, yes. He's now, keep your eye on Henry Ashton. He's going to do really
hot.
He's gorgeous, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny that they wrote, like, there's a gorgeous young guy being, like, obsessed with this older woman.
Yeah.
And she just can't, like, hit it. She's
calling him Mummykins. front of that. Does he? Yes.
And she just wants to have sex with him. She can't be bothered with him.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's really mean to him.
Totally. Yeah. You're completely in charge in that whole situation.
She's really mean to him. But I feel that it's our women writers just find that the funniest.
Yes.
You can just know that there's love writing.
It's an interesting thing because it is women created the whole thing, isn't it? And it has got a kind of women's view.
Yeah. It was entirely from our two producers, Laurie and Sarah Bradshaw, and then you got Jamie, and you got Gemma and Meredith. And I like that. I find I'm very comfortable. I mean, my agents are women. I'm sort of surrounded. My wife is a woman.
Yes.
My daughters are women.
Yes.
And I'm very comfortable. I think it's a very... Well, there's no dick waving, is there? There's no sort of a...
But also, you know, we're not used to having things so much from the female perspective. For instance, that being a very funny joke. But of course, it is funny and it's fun to play. Yeah. But if maybe a male writer might have come up with it like that. Yeah. They wouldn't have found it. So you are actually seeing into areas that we haven't so...
Oh, completely. There's also more objectification, frankly, of male bodies in this film.
And
in a quite refreshing way.
Yeah.
When you see in the script a sex scene, do you think, oh, that's going to be fun? Or do you kind of dread it? So which way do you go?
Well, I mean, I suppose if I thought I was going to be totally naked and doing like, you know, proper sex, I'd be like, really?
Yeah.
But with Henry, I think I'm not having my clothes on, right?
That's true. Yeah, it seems fun. Yeah.
Maybe it was fun.
Yeah. If you had to do a sex scene?
Not in this. I've done one or two, very few. I always found...
Do you want to do them?
Do I want to do it? Well, not especially.
No, I mean, does anyone really even want?
No.
Well, you know.
I found in my experience, it depends how you get on with the actress.
That's right.
So I had a bed scene with Catherine McCormack in Praise of Hardcore. I played Kenneth Tynan. And Catherine and I got on like a house on fire. We're very relaxed with each other. Yeah. So that was easy.
Yeah.
There was another one I did, remain nameless, a far more bland scene, but we were not relaxing each other's company, and so that was trickier.
Yeah, there's nothing you can't legislate for that. Just
if it's someone you're not clicking with, you're not finding a common ground. You and I, we'd get on very well. We'd have a laugh. We're relaxed. Yes. We'd see the funny side of it.
Yeah,
I wouldn't feel at all self conscious, but. So it comes. I think it comes down to that.
Season two, maybe.
With his son.
Oh, that's true. Of course, that would be horrendous. Yes,
exactly. I've got boundaries.
Fair enough. I think it's nice that we are. I see. It's all about ten. It's like when people say, "Tell us what happened on the fishing trip in Gavin and Stacey." I must never reveal that.
No.
And so any sort of antagonistic tension between you and I. You must never snap that strip.
You're completely.
You're going to play with that strip back and forth, but never.
No, I mean, that, if they wrote any more, they obviously have to keep all those tensions.
Yeah. Right, is that, yeah. Now, I've seen you said in I think it was in the press back interview, that you did use a sort of politician.
Yes.
Being sort of.
That's right.
And you said, Michelle, you didn't name him, but come on.
I'll tell you, Boyd, thanks for you finished the podcast, but I don't want to. The problem with stuff like that is the minute you say it.
Yeah.
And then you said it.
Nobody cares what I say, but nonetheless, it becomes a thing.
Yes.
That follows you.
Yes.
So
I'm not trying to get into trouble.
But there was, it's not trouble, it's just a bore, isn't it, really?
Mm.
And it's another thing in your press kind of thing.
discreet.
I try to be discreet.
Yeah.
But there was one, so I read it and I thought, right, oh, it's a bit like, because he's a courtier and he's sort of being two-faced, he's quite political.
Yeah.
So I thought of somebody, but then I stayed with that for a bit, but then I decided it's quite restrictive to only be thinking of this person. So I just took that idea, and then as we said earlier, you just find the parts of your own personality. I just said that in another interview. And so you find the parts of your own personality and bring it to the fore. So that, yeah, it did have a particular politician in mind.
Do you know who the politician is?
No, she's not interested.
Listen, that's the difference. You've just been thrust together in this bloody jungle. It's not even just me.
Just about had enough.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. What I want to ask you about the costume and the looks. I mean, the costumes are almost comically elaborate. And I know you've done loads of period stuff before.
That would be quite realistic.
Right.
Because when you actually look, if you go to the National Portrait Gallery, when you really do look, which is a nice thing about costume drama, because then you want to go and actually see it. You look at paintings in a completely different way.
So. Yeah.
What's she wearing? Oh, she's got a ring there. You'd think, that feels quite more than that ring. They have a lot of asymmetrical things going. When you really look in, sometimes they had insects on chains that would be actually moving around the top of the dress.
Wow.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I mean, that's far out. Do we have that? I wanted that.
Oh, okay. Again,
I was like, can I have that?
Yeah.
So then to begin with, my costume started off a little bit more just like the girls, you know, that just put it in there like a frog.
Mm.
I was like, no. I can't be like the girls, like a bad version of the girl. No. I want like powder on. I want jungle nets.
Yeah.
And it is huge. Becomes more like that.
Yes.
Yeah, and then fantastic. That just feels big.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a lovely bit where you're picking a copy.
Yes. That's quite a
thing. Must be pretty much a daily routine.
Yes, I don't start any day without a quick selection. I mean, the men's costumes are very elaborate as well.
Mm.
We've often been asked on this, what were the challenges? And I think that the journalist always thinks you're going to say, getting inside the mind of my character. But no, that's easy. It was the costumes, because starting at the feet, they're like slippers. There's no support, and you're stood on a concrete studio floor all day. So if you can't see my feet in a shot, I've got Nikes on. Then they're handmade. All my costumes are handmade for me. So if during the fitting you're not stood in your correct posture, there was one that used to pull my shoulders forward, to which you might say, Boyd, pull yourself together, Rob. That's hardly the end of the world. But if you're wearing it all day, I had a cloak that weighed a ton, and you're all trussed up. Those are
great. Like the same size as when they measured you.
Well, maybe not. Yeah, maybe.
Then they're like, maybe Harry said, they need help to get you in it.
Of course, yeah.
So the costume maintain really the same size in terms of the character, and the sets are incredible because you feel like you are there. You feel you're that person, but. Are you very so? It was always a nice feeling at the end of the day when you're back in the trailer, bop, and you can take that off and put your
special outside. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the times, you know, it's sitting around.
Of course.
So you're sitting in these these dresses that are like stone.
Yeah, it's common.
And in fact, you're like, come in, and is there any room for you to sit? And everyone's like, hello. You know, as you take off about, you're like,
that's. And I have to watch about your face spots as well.
About what?
Your face spots?
Yes.
The facial facelift. Then I
thought, no doubt. That was a conscious thing because, as I think I said earlier, I wanted to do this just to remind people, or show people, I'm an actor, I can play myself parts. And so how can I look different? Mm. Well, I knew I'd look different with the costumes. And I just thought that it would be a nice opportunity to do that. But I forgot that it was a 7-month shoot. So I would be stuck with this bloody thing and people would assume it was just a personal choice.
Yeah.
So I got a fair bit of abuse on social media. You know, what do you think you look like? You look like this.
Midlife crisis. That.
Yeah.
Midlife crisis. I used to joke for a while and say I was playing the lead in the Richard Hammond musical. Called I'm Always Looking Up, but I...
There was a very strong Hammondian look.
Yeah, it was. You know, I like to think it was Pacino-esque, but I think it was more Hammondian.
Yeah.
Richard Hammond.
He's the guy from Top Gear.
Yes.
So I did it for that. And they also said, grow your hair a bit longer and you'll see they coiffure it.
Yes, I love
the hair. Walnut.
Yeah. Awesome.
In a way, the looks have to be very recognisable, don't they?
Yes.
Very sort of... iconic, almost each look has to be bang right in.
I think they've succeeded in that, and again, it reminds me of Gavin and Stacey, in that the characters are very distinct. Would you agree?
Oh, completely.
I think, and there are more characters. Because
it's a large ensemble.
But they're very distinct. So Kate O'Flynn, you know, is different to Anna. Is different to Don.
That's right, even though they're both sort of villainous women, they're
really different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is quite clever writing, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And the script as well, we haven't said, but I did think the script had a quality that I love, which is economy.
You know,
it's witty.
Witty and economical.
But having worked with the director of Only Murders in the Building, are you going to get a role in a future series?
It's not for one.
You could both be in that.
Not for want of trying. I mean,
we were always telling her.
I was always telling her.
I bet you were.
And she did mention the possibility of maybe she could speak to someone, but it hasn't happened.
Okay. And has he asked you to be on his podcast? You know, he's got an excellent podcast.
She didn't know that.
I mean, you'd be a perfect guest for it. I mean, surely.
I would love it. Can I ask you now?
This is a historic moment live.
Robert, who do you speak to on your podcast?
Creative people.
Yes.
Creative.
You just had Ruth Jones on. Ruth Jones. You may have.
Would you come on my podcast? Yeah. All right, that's a yes.
It's made to ask me.
I want you to be on it.
You'll be, obviously, it's great. It'll be great. Yes.
Was Ruth great?
Of course she was.
Yeah, I've done her twice now.
Oh.
She's done her twice, I have.
Yeah.
Ruth write novels as well.
Yes. Oh, yeah, she does. She wrote her own show, Stella.
Best-selling novels. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, she's brilliant.
Finally, I know. Are you looking forward to the Christmas special of Anna, of Gavin and Stacey?
Well, I know.
Be honest. Be honest, Anna.
Yeah.
Anna, have you ever seen Gavin and Stacey?
No. You've got a tree in store.
I know.
You've got a few months to catch up.
You've got a bit of catching up.
Yeah. Plenty of time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
How many series are there?
Three specials.
I'm in one of the specials.
Yeah, he's
first you? Scene, putting some bright skin.
No, I actually really would like to go back and watch it. I would.
Yeah. Now you've worked with Rob.
Yeah, but I think she's brilliant too. And then one of the girls in it, I work.
Oh, you work with Jo Page.
Oh, lovely Jo Page. Yeah. No.
But I thought she was like, I would look at her having a makeup thinking, she's just, has heaven just opened and plopped out that gun?
Yeah.
Oh, well, lovely thing. Joe is lovely. That's brilliant. I think we've run out of time. Thank you so much, both of you, Boyd, for a lovely chat. Thank you.
That was Boydie and Anna Chancellor and Rob Brydon. And time now for this week's news, which you would think we'd prepared in advance, but you would be wrong. What have you got for us?
I have got the exciting news that the Rivals trailer dropped, which I'm very excited about. It's on Disney Plus. It's based on the iconic novel by Jilly Cooper. And I cannot be more excited about this. It's got such a great cast. I haven't read the books. I'm contemplating whether to do it before it lands. I think it's landing in October. But yeah, so I was very pleased to see that.
Good.
Yeah, that is exciting. But come on, there was one announcement this week that dwarfs all others. Dwarfs. I tweeted this, right? Got sent the press release yesterday as we're recording this on Friday, and I was excited. I tweeted it out. It went viral. Honestly, I sometimes you're the first person, like journalist or whatever, to tweet an announcement, a TV announcement. And I've had politicians and like writers,
really,
and, yeah, people like I've never heard of, like I didn't know, followed me or like retweeting it. Yeah, it's like thousands of people, and it's all about the return of Slow Horses. Obviously,
yes,
confirmed for Wednesday, September 4, 2024. Season 4. It's based on the book Spook Street, which was the fourth novel in the McCarran series on which it's based. Yeah, there's an image of Gary Oldman looking disheveled on his phone, funnily enough.
Standard.
But it's just fantastic news that it is back in September, not too far away. I mean, July, August, 2 months away, kind of two and a bit months away.
I just wanted to turn up on the Apple Screeners portal immediately so I can watch it.
Of course, but sometimes they do turn up pretty quickly, don't they?
Sometimes it's very early.
I wouldn't say I've checked like every other hour, but I have checked. I immediately checked on the day of the announcement, and then I've checked a couple of times since then. That's all I'm saying,
Talking about, just quickly about viral tweets. Now, obviously, this isn't the same because yours actually would have gone viral. My most popular, I rarely tweet. My most popular tweet.
Your most popular tweet? I mean.
Wow. That's a revelation we absolutely weren't expecting this morning.
It's the boys all over again. Yeah.
Was The Bear. They did this great promo. They had the van, which James missed. I was furious because he would have loved it. They gave some free breakfast items out. And because I tweeted about it, I don't think it was the van. It was because Boyd featured in the picture. And
don't pretend that you accidentally took a photo. You knew what you were doing. You knew I was going to be in that photo.
Yeah. No. What I'm saying is, I'm saying the popularity of the tweet was because it contained you in the photo.
Everyone
was loving the Boyd action.
People were commenting on me looking miserable and surly, mainly. I think you're fine.
And as I pointed out, it was because I said this is his standard reaction when he's talking to
resting,
me.
Resting
Boyd face.
But it was delicious, I have to say, delicious egg and cheese bap thing that they gave us.
I feel like an egg and cheese bap is the stuff that they would serve out of the beef window rather than out of the bear.
Definitely beef window.
Yeah, definitely beef.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, but it was delicious. And not someone asked, was I wearing a Supreme? I was actually wearing a Supreme t-shirt, but you couldn't see the logo.
Obviously, standard. Another trailer I saw, just wanted to mention, was the one for Joan, which is going to be on ITV. Anna Simon, the writer, tweeted about it. It's starring Sophie Turner. It's going to TX in September. And she's going to play real-life character Joan Hannington, who was a figure known as the godmother, apparently, amongst certain parts of the British criminal underworld. And the show will follow her journey from housewife and mother to petty offender to diamond thief and criminal mastermind in 80s London. So I'm looking forward to that as well. Mainly because when I clicked on Anna Simon, I didn't realise she'd written on Indian Summers, which I really enjoyed. So, but Sophie Turner in a TV show, always exciting.
Yeah. The new project from Richard Gadd of Bloody Reindeer fame has been announced. Did you see this?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
What is it?
It's Lion. It's not Lions. Baby Lion. Lions. So plural lions, but not specifically baby lions.
No baby lions. It is animal based title, though, as you've spotted. It's sorry. It's I literally just spat on my own laptop. It's intriguing. He's written it himself, blah blah blah. It's gonna be produced by HBO and the BBC, interestingly.
What's it about?
I'll tell you, Kay. Hold on one sec.
Sorry, I'm being impatient, but I'm excited to hear this news.
Blah, 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 blah. It's about... Oh, God, it's a long, long droning on...
It's about lions.
Here's the logline. When Niall's estranged brother, Reuben, shows up at his wedding, it leads to an explosion of violence that catapults us back through their lives. Spanning almost 40 years from the 1980s to the present day, this ambitious series will cover the highs and lows of the brothers' relationship, from their meeting as teenagers to falling out as adults, with all the good, bad, terrible, funny, angry, and challenging moments along the way. There you go.
Mm. Yeah. I think we kind of knew. I think we knew something about it previous to this, but obviously it's being co-produced by HBO. I think that's the main new development. But yes, the full synopsis also. Okay. Buffy.
Pardon me for mentioning it.
There you go. I've got Buffy news though for you. So Buffy is joining Dexter: Original Sin. Sarah Michelle Gellar has joined the cast of Dexter: Original Sin, the prequel series for that show, which may or may not involve weird incestuous love affairs, but probably not. Okay, so that's good. Always nice to have Buffy in a TV show.
My friend Sarah Michelle Gellar,
Your close personal friend Sarah Michelle Gellar. That's absolutely right.
Exactly.
What else has happened? Oh, now Kay, you'll be very excited to hear that director Krennic is returning in Andor season 2. That's Mendo. You love Mendo. You love Mendo, don't you? Mendo is going to be back in his role, the director Krennic, which he played in Rogue One, and he's going to be reprising that role in Andor season 2.
Couldn't be more excited.
For the return of Mendo.
I'd be more excited by the. Did you see that Andy Lincoln's coming back to British TV? Andrew Lincoln in a show called Cold Water for ITV, produced by Sister, who are the production company that just signed up, are the OA creators that we mentioned last week on the show. And this, they also did, they did Eric, This Is Going to Hurt, etc., Chernobyl, and others. And this
ITV's knocking it out of the park.
ITV's going Joan very, and the Ness, exactly, getting very big and ambitious, Andrew Lincoln will play a repressed man who is shocked to find himself in middle age, secretly raging at his life as a stay-at-home dad. When his failure to intervene in a violent confrontation in a playground brings his identity crisis to a head, he ups and moves his family to Coldwater, far away from London as possible. And then in Coldwater, he gets befriended by the man next door and thriller ensues. Basically, it also starts Indira Varma, who is the busiest actor on TV because she is in everything.
She
was in Doctor Who.
Eve Miles is in it. Talking of Doctor Who, and very good.
Eve Miles
and Ewan Bremner. So good, very exciting. Sister / Andrew Lincoln / good stuff.
ITV News.
Yeah.
This is not news for Kay, but Rosario Dawson has joined the cast of Terminator Zero, which is Netflix's anime series. The first anime series based in the Terminator universe. She's playing an advanced AI called Kokoro.
Hmm.
So the Harry Potter TV series is still going ahead on HBO, and this one has added Succession duo Mark Mylod and Francesca Gardner as director and writer, respectively.
Mark Mylod, that's friend of the exciting. Pod.
Friend of the pod, Mark Mylod.
Yeah.
And this is coming on HBO. Now, obviously, it's technically a Max original, but I seem to recall, Boyd, and you
talk about,
they're bringing the HBO back to HBO Max, aren't they?
Yeah, this is the other element of this story that's interesting. Yeah, that and their other huge show, can't remember which one, are going to be HBO originals.
Yeah.
So it's like they've done this thing where they remarketed the whole thing as Max, the evil people in charge of, they're not evil, but the people in charge of Warner Brothers, Discovery, HBO, all that bullshit. They suddenly decided they had to foreground the streaming service Max. But then they've gone, oh no, actually everyone, the HBO brand is so powerful that the best TV ever is HBO. So we'll go back to calling stuff HBO. And Harry Potter is an example of that. For sure.
It's almost like someone could have told them that HBO was an incredibly powerful brand and a really...
Even I could have told them that.
Yeah.
Instead, let's call it Max. No. Yeah. Okay, well, that's good news all round. Is that it for news? Are we done? Okay, we're done with news. Okay, time for this week's reviews. And first up this week, or last up last week, depending on your point of view, is The Bear, which we were finally able to see when it dropped on Disney Plus for absolutely everyone. But we're not bitter. It's absolutely fine. Of course, the question is, was the show kept from us for nefarious reasons? Boydie, what have they cooked up for us in season three?
I think they might have kept it from reviewers for reasons. Yeah, I do. But it's interesting,
really?
Because no one in America, none of the American critics got to see it in advance either, which meant they all had to stay up, you know, late at night. All the big, like, you know, Alan Sepinwall, Rolling Stone, Hollywood Reporter type, big cheeses of the American TV critic world weren't sent in advance, which is very unusual, not to be sent in advance at all, a show of this magnitude and of this amount of acclaim. And I remember distinctly that they sent us all of season two, pretty much, you know, easily in advance for us to review it globally. And I think they were worried. I genuinely think they're worried. And in fact, some of the critical reaction to it, not all by any means, but some of it has been quite harsh. First of all, about the first episode. So the only episode is Maverick, right? It's absolutely bonkers.
It's basically great.
I agree.
I loved it as well. But I think opinions differ. And I've noticed some of the critics who are a bit down on the whole season as a whole start with being pissed off with the opening episode. Because basically, it's like a tone poem recap of everything we've seen before in Carmi's life, like from his point of view, and a summary, you know, of how he started in this one restaurant where he was absolutely bullied by the head chef. Then he was worked on with Olivia Colman's character and blah blah blah, and you know all the things that have happened. How he ended up locked in the fridge at the end of the previous season, and he pissed off Claire, the love of his life, potentially, and all the machinations. How he ended up, you know, turning the beef eatery into this haute cuisine palace that he's trying to run. But it was done hardly any dialogue, or hardly any audible dialogue. This like incredibly hypnotic music playing on in the background from Trent Reznor and Atticus
Ross.
What's his name? Ross, thank you. Which reminded me of the soundtrack to The Social Network. Do you remember The Social Network starts off with this very, very hypnotic piano music? It was a bit similar to that. And like very subjective, kind of beautifully shot, but you know, kind of like what on earth is going on swirling in the mind of Carmi. And I thought it was brilliant. I absolutely loved it. But it's definitely like something we've never seen before, I don't think. I don't recall a third season, a new season of a show, kind of going over the old ground, but as I say, turning it into this like poetic thing. I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Then the second episode is a complete different, like it's like, oh my God, explodes into life. And it's people living, smashing plates and throwing things and telling each other to fuck you.
It's a 30-minute argument around a table, isn't it?
Like, yeah. Oh my God.
It's just people yelling at each other for half an hour.
Yeah, it's basically Carmi and Richie saying fuck you to each other for half an hour.
It gives me so much joy.
Yeah. While Sydney, Ayo Edebiri, brilliant, tries to be like the voice of reason, tries to kind of keep them, you know, on an even keel, but while failing. Lionel Boyce as Marcus. Marcus is, I think he's the most incredibly soulful character out there. He's so brilliant, and his performance. And we, because his mother died at the end of the previous season, I think, didn't she? So it's not a spoiler. So spoiler alert. I'm going to do my spoiler alert. which the listeners love. But his reaction to his mother dying, they're incredibly close. And it, you know, a lot of the storyline of season two is him caring for her and making sure she's okay. And he is heartbreaking, that guy. I mean, unbelievable performance, line of voice. He's so moving. I think almost like he can just stand there and stare at a dessert that he's preparing and you're like practically in tears just because there's something so like dignified about him. Mm-hmm. And he's like the whole idea of the show, which I think is like, you know, especially this season, actually, you know, it's all very well being this like absolute super chef, legendary genius, difficult, you know, another difficult man storyline, which, by the way, all of the best seemingly peak TV shows are, going back to The Sopranos and Succession and Breaking Bad. They're all difficult, egomaniacal men. And I think part of the whole that theme of this show particularly is,
thank you, Kay. Podcast.
Yeah. Kay just gestured listeners to me and James. Fair enough. But part of the whole like theme of this, overriding theme of this series, I think, is do you have to be that kind of person to achieve genius, like to achieve something special? And it's all about legacy. There's a lot of talk in the series about, you know, that they're all, you know, think of your legacy, and Carmi particularly is thinking about his legacy and stuff. They're obsessed about whether they're going to get, how they're going to get reviewed in the paper.
Non-negotiables.
You know, all of this. Non-negotiables and all that. But then you see the character of Marcus, and I think that's like, what they're saying is the humanity is more important in the end than being this, you know, genius showman. And you can resolve, you can be brilliant at what you do, and also be a decent human being at the same time. So I think that, without giving away any deals, I've got up to the finale. As we started this podcast, I've got about 5 minutes to go. So I've watched all 10 episodes pretty much, apart from the last 5 minutes.
Oh, God.
So a lot of the thing that critics have said, that a lot of the American critics have said, it's had brilliant reviews as well, don't get me wrong. But the criticism that people are saying is it's like repetitive and it's just going through the same things that we've gone through before. Now, interestingly, that's what people said about Succession, right? Succession was like, best season after season was, who is going to succeed Brian Cox and how are they going to keep the company together? And they just do that in different ways, basically throughout, you know, dozens and dozens of episodes, but fair enough. Because when the drama is this genius and when the storytelling and the characters are so fascinating, yes, you are going to go over the same ground. And sure enough, The Bear season 3, now he's owned the fucking restaurant, which was, you know, the whole Jeopardy of season 1. Now it's keeping it going. It's the Jeopardy of series season 3. Can they keep this fucking, especially when Carmi, the lunatic, egomaniac, etc., head chef, decides he's going to change the menu every fucking day, which is the brilliant, like, challenge to this in this season. So it is a bit repetitive, I agree. And they don't resolve a lot of the things that have been ongoing in the show since season 1. But who gives a shit? When the show is this good, and believe me, it is, there's some absolutely brilliant episodes again in this. There's a two-hander pretty much at one point between two characters, so I won't spoil it, coming up. There's guest stars. There's one brilliant bit of casting because of just like the character having to deal with this person, and it's played by this guy who's like, you know, super handsome, you know, I won't spoil it. And I've got up to the final episode, and the final episode is fantastic. I've got, you know, from what I've, with 5 minutes to go. So I think it is back to being, it's still the best thing on TV now since, because Succession's finished, and, you know, I think this is the show that is now the number one peak TV American, beautifully written, shot, directed. Everything about it is great. The music, REM, Cocteau Twins, couldn't be better for me. So yeah, I still absolutely love it. I will defend this season to the hilt. I think some of the critics are wrong. It's brilliant.
You're right. A lot of the critics did latch on to that first episode, like to say, why are we starting with a clip reel? It's like, it's not a clip reel. Yes, it's kind of a montage, but it's like a mood piece into the psyche of Carmi after he had a massive breakdown at the end of the second season. So thematically, it seems to follow on beautifully to me. I thought it was an absolutely hypnotic way to start the episode. And then to go from that into that round table argument episode, which was like, okay, now we're back in The Bear. And then you're like, well, if that was stressful, then the next one is like the first few weeks of opening the restaurant. You're like, oh my God, by the end of that, I was breathless. breathless. So it's, I mean, it's not easy television to watch,
no.
But it's so beautifully shot. Their use of kind of like vignettes and soft focus and just like the camera work, the extreme close-up camera work, like the count every pore on their faces camera work. I mean, it's incredibly effective. And as someone who, let's be honest, fine dining for me is getting a fino side at Nando's. So, you know, like genuinely, so all of this food shit is lost on me completely. I'd be 100% round the back at the beef window rather than, you know, as you're sitting down in the bear. But so even though I don't care about like foodie stuff, I still find it fascinating watching get the little tweezers out and put like a little sprig of like, and there's something kind of just Spartan and sterile about the work surfaces and everything. It's just a beautiful, beautiful show. And I love it. And I wasn't disappointed at all.
I absolutely agree. That first episode, the woozy, dreamlike quality of it was just so, it's so beautiful, the fluidity of that shot, you know, just following him on his journey to becoming this brilliant chef. It was different, but who gives a shit? Like, it can do that. You know, it's so well written that why wouldn't you want to do something different? Because you are then going to be plunged into the usual chaos of the restaurant. And I have to say, I couldn't do what you did, Boyd. I couldn't watch it all because I have to drip feed. I have to, you know, monitor my intake of Carmi because I don't want it to run out.
It's because we're doing weekly spoiler specials, isn't that's right, isn't it, Kay? That's the reason.
That was the dream scenario. Boyd ruined. Boyd fucking ruined for everyone, lest we forget. And then lashed out at the poor listener who suggested it. Anyway, I only watched two episodes, and the second episode called Next. I know I'm saying this prematurely, but it's a contender for my favorite episode of the season. I know that's nuts because obviously I haven't watched the rest of it, but I just loved how perfectly orchestrated the dialogue was between, you know, Carmi and Richie. It was like, and Sydney too, obviously peppering and the other characters as well. But the writing is exceptional and the performances too, because it's a bit like that dinner, the Fishes
episode? Fishes.
Where, you know, it's so intricately done with all the characters having to talk just at the right time. But you're right, you know, the whole fuck you, no, fuck you then, like that, which, you know,
reminded me of doing this podcast.
Exactly. I was thinking of you guys when I watched it. I thought, oh my God, I would go to that level. But it helped relieve the tension, even though they weren't joking and it was, you know, much needed. But yeah, and Sydney just cutting through the bullshit with, you know, such eloquence and economy of words compared to these doofuses who are just like, you know, fighting it out. That was very arresting. But yeah, just fucking loved it. And the second episode, I have to say, Neil Fack, played by Matty Matheson, who I had no clue was an actual chef. And I didn't realise that he was a culinary consultant and producer on the show and then, you know, took on this role because they wanted him to be in it, but he was insistent he didn't want to be cooking in it. He uttered the phrase, which now I'm like going to add to my collection of banana phrases. But when he said, this is kind of banana town, I was like, yes, Neil. banana cracks and banana town, I'm adding it to the list. But just those, even there are no characters that are pointless or, you know, underserved. They all have important roles to play and are well developed. But as you say, Marcus, just I think he's the circuit breaker in this. He's the one who grounds them and brings it back to, you know, reality.
Yeah, he's the heart. Yeah, he's the heart and soul of the show. Absolutely. I tell you who else though struck me is such a MVP who doesn't get mentioned, I think, probably as much as the rest of the cast, is Oliver Platt as Jimmy. You know, the financier, the uncle. Yeah, uncle, because he sweeps in, you know, telling them they've got to fucking get. You know, they're all losing their minds. And he's, you know, him dealing with the idea that they're going to change the menu every day, for example. You know, it's just the way he deals with stuff is so brilliant. He's got a scene with Carmi late on in the season that I get to, which is just an amazing scene, just the two of them. And he's so funny because Oliver Platt is just he's just completely perfect in that role. It's like he invented that role for him. He's so good. He's just like this heavyweight presence. Kind of making stuff happen and resenting the fact at the same time. It's like, oh, he's just incredible. But yeah, it's just absolutely genius show.
Yeah, it's very good. Also, shout out to Liza Colon-Zayas, who plays Tina. She gets an episode all to herself.
She gets
this season.
An episode, yeah.
Oh, good.
But also, I never get tired of her. Yes, Jeff.
Have you She's noticed great. They say hands when they yes. when they want yeah mm. and we it's we yeah. say service, right? So you know, the British, that's
we do
very key
they don't
British.
In Nando's, but sure
yeah so So yeah, in British, and the other thing I was going to say is I think this was the most boiling point. You know, boiling point the British, which I really liked.
Stephen Graham.
But this, yeah, Stephen Graham. This I thought this was the most boiling point like season so far of this, because obviously they've got a lot in common, these two shows, and they haven't. You know, the boiling point was in the film was being dreamt up at the same time as this, I think. But it's interesting how similar a lot of the scenes are in this season to Boiling Point, I think. The slightly different level of restaurant, because Boiling Point is more like a normal, fairly, you know, not like an ultra haute cuisine as this one. This is 9 courses for $185, you know. It's a different world. but there are similarities, and I think, you know, and yet they both are different enough to make them great. But this is like, you know, genius level great.
I'm obsessed.
The Bear Then, season 3 of which is available now on Disney+. Next up, we have a cheeky, sweary, anachronistic take on Tudor England and the life of the 9 Days Queen, as she's often called, Lady Jane Grey, here played by Emily Bader. And this is based on a novel series of the same name, or rather the first book in the novel series is called My Lady Jane. So it is historical, except with more David Bowie and people turning into horses. So that's nice. This isn't the bear, but there is a bear in it. The question, however, is could Kay bear it?
Very good. I could bear it. It's an interesting one. So it's a lavish historical drama, which has got a great cast. You've heard from two of them, Rob Brydon, Anna Chancellor, but also stars Dominic Cooper and Mairead Tyers from Extraordinary, who we loved in Extraordinary.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's like an interesting take on this well-known part of Tudor history, which is Lady Jane Grey, queen for 9 days before she was beheaded. And this looks at this is kind of a feminist look at it. What would happen if actually she didn't die, she wasn't executed, and in fact lived her best life. So I really enjoyed the concept of that because, you know, it's a fresh take, etc. So we see her, the character of Jane is a real intellectual rebel. She wants to publish a book on medicinal herbs and has no interest in marrying anyone, but her mother, played by Anna Chancellor, is determined for them to secure their family's future because she's a widow. And so she wants to marry her off to Rob Brydon's son, played by Edward Blumel, Lord Dudley, who is a notorious drunk and gambler and shagger. And I say shagger because this is a very sweary show. That's the, you know, modern language. But the thing I feel about this is I really did enjoy it, and it's an entertaining romp. But there's this feeling I have that they're just trying a little too hard to make it kind of edgy with the language. And the other thing I think that I didn't quite enjoy as much. So overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun and it's entertaining and it's got a great cast. But there's a, as you alluded to, a supernatural element to this whereby certain parts of the society are able to turn into animals.
Oh, they lost you, didn't they? They immediately lost you.
They did, James. The shapeshifting, I was like, it got to the shapeshifting, I was like, nope. It's a step too far.
Kay's
for me.
Out, I'm done, yeah. I'm finished.
Yeah, I was just like, is it necessary? Is it just a step too far? Do we really need it? I get that it's being ambitious and it's trying to do something different, but for me, it was enough to have the, you know, changing the history. That was enough. So, yeah, overall, fun and entertaining.
Yeah, presumably they've obviously taken that from the books. And the tone, I imagine, is lifted directly from the books as well, because it's a very specific tone. Like, it's very cheeky, it's very reverent, it's very anachronistic. Obviously, they use a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of like modern musical numbers in there as well. From 80s rock to, as we said, Bowie, there's all sorts of stuff in there. But it's also very sweary, and there's a very arch narration style all the way through this, which is genuinely very funny. It's very my sense of humor, that is. I really enjoyed the narrator. But also, I should say, the thing that threw me is I kind of, from the subject matter, from the age of the central character stuff, I assume this was kind of like upper end YA kind of level, but it is really edgy for that. And also, we should say, this show begins with what I guess could be described as a fanny cam, which is probably not what I was ideally expecting.
Right.
It's not what I was expecting from this.
Listen, I don't often draw a line, but you saying that word is absolutely abhorrant to me. You cannot say that.
Okay, there is a vagina's eye view shot. of the central character, and that is how the show begins.
Just imagine that he's talking about like the American use of the word fanny.
You that's know, what they, I thought at first. Yeah, I was hoping. Like,
fanny pack.
Well, then we're back to the boys, pack. Aren't we? So that's kind of fanny cam.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
it was unexpected. But again, it does things like this. So I watched four episodes of
really?
This. Yes. I was watching it most of yesterday. I found it very compelling. I think partly because it ends on kind of cliffhangers on every episode. Mm. So it really does draw you onto the next one. But I just wanted to know what happens. I thought she was incredibly good. I thought Emily Bader really, really brilliantly cast in this role. But also, like, the fact there are lots of twists and turns. Like, she's being forced to marry against her will, and you are fuming and furious about that. And then, without revealing the details, the person who plays the person she's supposed to marry is very, very good as well. And the fact that nobody listens to her, it's incredibly sexist, as in the society, not the show. and the fact that she's kind of railing against these things. I think the casting on this is genuinely great. Everyone, Henry Ashton, who is absolutely hateable, Edward Blumeler, also very, very good in this. And then Dominic Cooper, who no one gives maximum bell end quite like Dominic Cooper. He is on full bell end mode here as well. It's just a lot of fun.
You get the
it's
sense that they're fun. Having fun, don't you?
You do, yeah.
Yeah, it definitely. It's a romp. As I said to Rob Brydon and Anna Chancellor in the interview, hopefully you hear that if you can wade through the sound issues. It is an app, but I tell you what, though, it's hard to pull off this tone because remember, very recently, we had Dick Turpin's show on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah.
Now, as far as I'm concerned, that was trying to do exactly what this show is trying to do, but it totally failed for me. And that show, it was like, there's you can be wacky and Monty Python-esque and a romp and very bawdy. And as James says, it's very, you know, the humor is really cheeky and, you know, there's loads of like sex references and bodily parts and swearing and all that and C words and effing and jeffing and all that. And you really have to, maintain some discipline as well, right? You have to make the story interesting as well. You can't just have all that bullshit stuff because you have to have interesting characters, funny, played well. In a weird way, even though it's a total romp and it is really silly and all that, it also takes itself seriously enough in terms of coming up with interest. As you say, I agree with you. It ends on cliffhangers, it draws you in. I watched four episodes as well. And whereas Dick Turpin was just... it just didn't bother with the story at all. It was just completely self-indulgent bullshit. So I think, and the other thing is...
What did you really think?
Yeah.
Tell us what you really thought.
By the way, I think all the people who worked on that show are really talented.
Yeah, it had great people in it. It just didn't quite click with me.
Hugh Bonneville, it just went wrong. It just somehow went wrong. Because it's hard. I think it's really hard to pull this kind of
thing
off.
It's really difficult to make this kind of thing. Yeah. It's like, you know, you look at The Great as well, which kind of has that very sort of anachronistic, sort of very arch tone. And sometimes it lands, but it only has to be like a fraction off for it not quite to click.
Exactly. And the other thing is, the other comparison is, so I had no idea about the shape-shifting animal element at all. I'd somehow like, even to the point where like, I was like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah, I
was not expecting it. And it's one of the rare times, because most of the time, I have to give credit to the Prime Video, you know, publicity or whatever, the whole campaign has kind of kept that quite under the what's the word I'm looking for?
Radar.
Under the radar, thank you. It's really quite rare these days you're genuinely surprised by a turn that a TV show takes that you had no idea. And so I was like, what the fuck is happening? And so it worked. And even though it's insane and weird that there's this whole fantastical shape-shifting animal element to it, it reminded me of the Renegade Nell, Sally Wainwright show, where you suddenly have the fantastical elements of that. And so it's weird. And I was talking to someone in TV the other day about this. And I was saying how similar the ideas were. And I couldn't remember the title, Renegade Nell. I was like, Sally Wainwright's thing about the people with the sprite and the thing. And I was like, oh, exhausted myself.
Nick Mohammed.
But Nick Mohammed, exactly. But they are quite similar. So I really enjoyed this much more than I kind of expected to. And I think the casting is great. I think Rob Brydon and Anna Chancellor are both brilliant. Anna Chancellor's haughty kind of like, you. Of course you've got to marry the person I'm arranging you to marry, you absolute loser, kind of whole attitude to her own daughter is brilliant. And Rob's just really having the time of his life talking about cod pieces and, you know, this, that, and the other. So, yeah, it's a really entertaining show, really entertaining.
It's funny, but yeah, as you said, the story is really propulsive as well. I fully intend to watch all of this.
Yeah.
Just because I had a really, really unexpectedly good time with it. Like, genuinely, this was most of my yesterday. So My Lady Jane, then, which lands on the Prime Video. When does it land, Boydie?
It has already landed.
Already landed on the Prime Video. Okay. There we go.
Apologies.
Finally this week, we have A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, and this one is based on the Holly Jackson book of the same name. And this one stars Emma Myers as Pip, a girl who decides that, for a school project, she'll reopen an investigation into the killing of a girl at her school. As you do! Boydie, what did your investigation of this turn up?
Well, it turned up that this is based on a very popular book, YA book, I believe.
It is, yeah.
Yes. Have you read it?
I haven't read it, but I'm aware of it.
You're quite a YA.
I do love a bit of friendly. YA. It's true. It's also directed by Dolly Wells.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. It's directed by the great Dolly Wells, best known for being a brilliant actress in Dracula, etc. She's always fantastic, Dolly Wells. So I think she's done a pretty good job, I have to say, because she has to kind of corral these quite a big cast of teenage characters. She has to help, and it's also mostly written by Poppy Cogan, did the main adaptation with other writers, I guess, in a writer's room. But they have to kind of convince you of the idea that this young woman, played by Emma Myers, Pippa Fitz-Amobi, can somehow launch her own investigation into a case that happened, into a alleged murder that happened 5 years previously, when this young woman was killed, and everyone assumed that that her boyfriend did it, and he took his own life. And Pip decides that she doesn't believe that, and she kind of witnessed a kind of things going on. She saw these characters doing stuff that she leads her to doubt the reality of the situation. So it's like off school for the summer, she takes it upon herself to launch an investigation, and she gets the brother of the guy who died in that whole situation on board with her to launch this investigation. And at the same time, you've got the characters like her mother is played by Anna Maxwell Martin. It's been a very Anna Maxwell Martin heavy episode already. And Matthew Bainton is in it as another parent. And it's kind of about, you know, how it's like a true crime, slightly got a true, what happens if there's a true, and there's a, you know, you can imagine doing the kind of thing that gets talked about in those shows we've done where they do podcasts about it. In this case, it's like she's doing it as a special class exercise, like a special project for her school, but she's going to take it upon herself to investigate this murder case. I enjoyed it. I thought Emma Myers was really good in the lead role, likable. And I thought the whole cast, it's difficult. Like, I watched the first two episodes. The first episode is such a scene setter that it's difficult to get much of a handle on many of the characters. Then I think it kicks in more on the second episode, where you get to know the characters better. I'm enjoying it.
I had one question really in this, and you know, not to rag on Emma Myers' performance here, but she when I couldn't quite work out what was going on with her accent through a lot of this,
yeah,
and it threw me until I looked it up and realized she's from Florida.
She's
and
American. I was just
like, yeah, and I thought that's an. I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? Because I mean, Emily Bader, who played My Lady Jane, also American, but flawless English accent.
I had no clue.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas here, I thought, you're not English, are you? Because your accent is all over over the place.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's that very kind of faux posh English accent, which sounds caricatured. It just doesn't sound organic and doesn't sound right. And I found that, I have to say, a little distracting.
I agree.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, the accent is dodgy. Yeah, but I just kind of like dealt with it.
I couldn't actually really get my head around that character. Like, I struggled with her. I don't know if this is in the book, that's the thing, or if it's just, you know, something about the performance, but I just felt like there was sort of an awkwardness and about her manner that I found difficult to watch. That, you know, she just, there's an intensity to her. And I don't know if that's part of the character, but yeah, possibly it's because it's YA and it's not my
Well, she is a bit odd. Like, she's definitely an odd character. She is quite intense. But you're right. There is something slightly off about her going through this.
So I also didn't know if it was that, you know, she was on the spectrum in some way or whatever. But it's more that I just felt her parts were quite stilted. And it felt that there was quite a lot of stuff being spelled out to us in this first episode, whether it was her, you know, through communicating with her friends and going over it multiple times or on the suspect wall. I don't know. I felt there was a little lack of sophistication almost.
Mm. Were you drawn into the story at all? Like the mystery?
No, because do you know what? And this is nothing to do with. It's more that, you know, like I think if I read the book, I'd feel obviously exactly the same because it's obviously not a story for me. But I just felt in the concept of this young girl investigating this crime, it doesn't really just sit, you know, it doesn't feel realistic to me necessarily.
But on the plus side, she didn't turn into an animal at any point.
Yes, exactly. So on that point, on that basis,
so
I enjoyed
it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, there was, you know, there were elements I enjoyed, but I just think overall, I couldn't get on board with the main character.
I think she is deliberately awkward. Yeah, definitely. By the way, with the character, yeah,
but it feels very deliberate. It feels almost, you know, affected.
Yeah, it's partly about social awkwardness. The whole thing, like the, you know, with you have friendship groups with, you know, socially awkward people in it, and I think that's partly what it's about. Yeah, so I didn't have a problem with it. I thought she was quite interesting. And I think when she teams up with the brother character, I think
yes,
quite
he's
good.
I liked him.
Like a good kind of, yeah, like Sherlock Watson kind of situation thing. So I think, yeah, I'm enjoying it enough to carry on work. And I am intrigued by the mystery as well. I think the mystery is interesting.
I think because the book is so well regarded, I was maybe expecting slightly more.
Yeah,
any problem.
Maybe.
Like it didn't seize me. And you know, part of it I suspect is because unfortunately it comes in a week where there's two. Well, actually not a week because The Bear came out last week, but you know what I mean. Like we're watching it alongside The Bear, which is outstanding, like absolute top tier television. My Lady Jane, which was an absolute surprise treat, and then I came to this one. I'm like, it's fine. Like it's okay. Like there's nothing wrong with it. It's not bad in any way. But I'm not sufficiently compelled to carve out more time to watch it when I have like however many more episodes of The Bear to sit through. Little disappointed, but only sort of mildly. Most of my issues with it, to be honest, are very similar to Kay's, and that I didn't quite warm to her as a character. The accent thing, you know, I got past it. Let's be honest, it's not the end of the world. It is what it is. But the mystery itself in that first episode, I do think, as you said, Boydie, they're establishing so many characters and so many things. And yes, there's a bit where she's dressed up as a star, and that's quite funny. But I just, by the end of the episode, I was a bit like, do I care? How this resolves, I'm not sure I do. So, yeah, sadly, this probably isn't one for me. But in another week, who knows? It might have been our pick of the week. Not this week, though. Sorry.
Oh, no. There's only one pick of the week.
No.
Come on.
Yeah.
The Bear.
Well, first of all, what else have we missed? Like, what else is out this week that we haven't covered, Boydie?
I mean, nothing. Because
nothing.
This is like a very thin week. Yeah, because basically
really
you've got football, the Euros still going on. Wimbledon starts on Monday. Glastonbury starts, which takes over the entire. So there's just literally we have covered the only shows. I think there's a show coming to W on Wednesday called Love Me, which is a Swedish Australian adaptation of a Swedish show, which starring Hugo Weaving and other people. That is kind of new to British television. That starts on Wednesday. And there's like Murder Murders the Movie, which isn't really a movie. It's a two-part drama starring Bill Pullman about a famous true life murder case. And there's a drama called Hope Street on the Drama Channel on Wednesday as well, which is like a Northern Irish kind of detective drama. But that is it. Yeah, it's like dredging. The
yeah.
bottom of the barrel.
I mean, there's quite a lot happening next week, so it's a bit of a shame.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this week is a little bit tight.
A lot happened last week, and a lot happens next week, but this week in the middle has been,
Yes, clearly there's never been a better time to subscribe to Pilot Plus, but if you want us to review, I don't know, nothing this Thursday, then please do sign up. It's only $2.99 a month. An absolute bargain. But you do get the regular podcast without any ads at all, and you get it like 12 hours earlier, which is quite exciting because it drops
at
5 a.m.
Can I just tell you that a listener actually subscribed because they wanted to hear what we thought of Mr. In-Between. And I actually gave them a heads up because they said, oh, are you ever going to review it? And I said, oh, actually, we have done it on Plus, but oh, I don't think you're going to be very happy. And they said, irrespective of that, they wanted to sign up. Yeah, and they really enjoyed it. So thanks.
Well, we need to talk about what we're going to do on this week's Pilot Plus because there isn't another show coming that we can really cover on Pilot Plus. I will say, though, next week, every episode... Every single episode of Sons of Anarchy drops on UK TV. So maybe this is an excellent opportunity to get Kay to watch the first episode of Sons of Anarchy. And we can review that.
I've actually slumped in my chair.
Hey, there's no metamorphosizing into animals. There's no magic. There are no aliens. You'll love it. It's just people on motorbikes.
Small mercies.
Well, we'll do something. We will do something on Pilot Plus, and it will be absolutely worth it. Please subscribe. After some debate and discussion, we did, in fact, finally settle on something to do on this week's Pilot Plus, and it's going to be, wait for it, The Bear. We are, in fact, going to dedicate this week's Pilot Plus to a spoiler special for this third season of The Bear. Not, sadly, a week-by-week, episode-by-episode spoiler special. Apologies to the listener who suggested that, but Boyd was having none of it for understandable logistical reasons. But we're going to cover the whole of season three on this Thursday's Pilot Plus. So if you don't already subscribe, maybe do that now.
By the way, I don't think we said A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. I don't think we said when it's on.
Oh, we didn't say when it's on. Oh, okay.
No. Go on, then. It's quite unusual. It's quite interesting in itself. It's an iPlayer exclusive to start with. So it's on iPlayer from Monday, 1st of July, today, when this pod goes out. And then it's going to be on BBC Three the following week. And BBC One the following week. So yeah, it's all on. I think it's the BBC trying to be hit with the kids.
Okay. iPlayer only it is then.
Yep.
Pick of the week is The Bear, let's be honest.
Yeah,
I've already announced it.
Yeah, The Bear. I think that's fair. What else have we got? That's it. No, we're done. We're finished. We hope you enjoyed this particular podcast. If you did, then please do head on to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a 5 Anna Maxwell Martin rating. Also, we'd like you to follow us on the social medias at Boyd Hilton, at Kay Ribeiro, at Pilot TV Pod, and at James C. Dyer. And we're done. We're finished. We're out. What are we going to be doing next week? I mean, who knows? There's a lot of stuff on. Spenters on BBC Two. The Nightcaller comes to Channel 5. Reginald the Vampire's back. I'm not sure I care about that. Sully comes to Apple TV. Sisters comes to UK TV. We will have a selection of things from the various things broadcasting next week, and it will be exciting. Yeah, that's it. We're done. Say goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Pilot out.